Thanks for listening to this episode of the Westerosi Primer. For full show notes and more about all things Westeros, head to thewesterosiprimer.com. Before I start playing the intro music, check out this friend of the show.
Are you tired of having to change to different podcasts for different topics?
You think you know what we're going to talk about.
And welcome back to Three Fates Decide.
Then we're the podcast for you. Three Fates Decide podcast ranges in a variety of topics, all the way from true crime to reviewing different movies, shows, theater, to the hottest pop culture gossip and topics.
It just sounds more dramatic that way.
All right, so this week we are going to be talking about...
You can find us on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Deezer, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and all other podcast players. New episodes post every Friday. Feel free to also follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Three Fates Decide with the three spelled out. You can also shoot us an email at threefatesdecide@gmail.com to send us topics you want us to cover. We want to cover what you want. Want different topics? Well, then let the Three Fates Decide.
Three Fates Decide podcast.
Greetings, fellow acolytes. Welcome to another episode of the Westerosi Primer. My name is Liz. If you're new to this podcast, welcome. I hope you enjoy this journey of all things Westeros. And in this episode, I'll be talking about Aegon III. As I was writing the script to this episode and doing the research, it became clear that there's way too many things that happened to cover in one episode. So this will be another king where I split up his reign into two parts. Before I start the discussion, there are a couple of things to note. First, there will be some potential spoilers for people who have not read any of the books connected to A Song of Ice and Fire. There may also be potential spoilers for House of the Dragon and other shows adapted by Max in the future. So if you're okay with this, then please continue listening. Second, the information in this episode comes from the written works of George R.R. Martin and the contributors of A Wiki of Ice and Fire on Westeros.org. Check out the full show notes and other links located on this show's website, thewesterosiprimer.com. With that said, let's begin. If you hadn't been listening to the previous two episodes I did about the Dance of the Dragons, you have to, because otherwise this episode makes no sense whatsoever. This episode isn't just a biography episode about Aegon III. It's also about the aftermath of the dance. In its own way, the dance had a long-lasting impact on Westeros. And yet, it was very much a tragic story where a family nearly dies out because of ambition for power. So in this episode, we explore both the personal and wider impact the war left on Westeros. As I had covered in the previous two episodes, many dragons died during the dance. In fact, I actually didn't include a couple of other dragon deaths because they were riderless ones. But for the most part, most of the dragons and many of their eggs died during the dance. This is a major reason why, over 100 years later, no one could believe that Daenerys Targaryen hatched dragon eggs and got three dragons. As you'll see in future episodes, there would be multiple attempts to bring back dragons, but they more or less failed. I just have to do something slightly different here, which is to describe Aegon's personality, which isn't something I typically have done in the other episodes. Aegon was often described as being a somber, sullen boy who rarely laughed or smiled. He had little pleasure in most things that other people would be interested in. He knew his manners at court, but was just as likely to be curt and not very warm. But given what I literally talked about in the previous episode, can you really blame him? It's pretty clear he's a depressed, traumatized person. He's become the king of a war-ravaged continent when he's 11 years old. He also feels great guilt for abandoning his little brother. He's watched his mother die in front of him. Other than his older half-sisters and his cousin wife, he has no other family left. But of course, mental health isn't a thing in Westeros, so people just grumble and complain about how gloomy, sullen, and dull Aegon III is. Maybe it's just me, but I think it's an unfair description. I just had to talk about this because this undoubtedly is a big factor on his behavior and some of his decisions, as you'll see. I could start this episode to where we ended in the last episode. However, I feel that it's worth exploring Aegon's life from his early years. Even though his childhood overlaps with a little bit of Viserys' reign and then the dance, I didn't discuss him much in those episodes. The only real mention of Aegon III is in the previous episode. Aegon was born in AC 120 on Dragonstone. He had five older half-siblings. He had sisters Baela and Rhaena, who were born in AC 116. So in truth, Aegon isn't that much younger than them, which is pretty different from the TV show. The girls were aged up in the TV show to appear at least pre-teen age when Daemon and Rhaenyra got married. Meanwhile, Aegon looked like he was probably about 4 to 5 years old, when he really should be 9 when his grandfather Viserys died. His older brothers Jaehaerys, Lucerys, and Joffrey were from his mother Rhaenyra. They were born in AC 114, 115, and 117, respectively. So again, they aren't significantly older than him and Viserys, but were aged up in the TV show. When you think about it, Baela's battle with Aegon II on Dragonstone was pretty impressive considering she was only 14 years old. Considering the close age gap he had with Viserys, Aegon loved his younger brother. They really grew up together. They had their lessons and shared a bedroom together as children. This just reinforced their bond and a major reason why Aegon was guilt-ridden and depressed about leaving him behind. As I mentioned in the previous episode, Aegon had a young dragon named Stormcloud. Stormcloud was actually an egg that hatched in his crib, so it was a close bond rather than Aegon claiming a grown dragon. Aegon only really got to fly on Stormcloud the one time because of the dragon's age. Aegon was also a kid, which is probably why the dragon could carry him, even though it was young too. It's the same reason why Viserys was left behind. The dragon wasn't big or strong enough for a passenger. And as I mentioned in the previous episodes, eventually Rhaenyra would take over King's Landing, forcing her half-brother to escape. She ruled the city for about half a year. During that period, Joffrey and Aegon were brought to the Red Keep. Joffrey was going to be proclaimed Prince of Dragonstone with Jaehaerys dead. Aegon was to act as his mother's cupbearer, much like she had been her father's. Aegon was with her when the riots happened in the capital and fled with her to Dragonstone. As I mentioned in the previous episode, he was there watching his mother killed by Sunfire. His trauma involving dragons got exacerbated, and he secretly developed a fear and hatred towards dragons. He would spend the rest of the war as a prisoner by his uncle. At different points during the final months of the war, he was nearly executed. There were people who had suggested that he be executed since he's a threat to Aegon II's position. Of course, he was spared, and ultimately he became the king after his uncle died, which is where I'll pick up what happens after that. He's 10, almost 11 years old when he's the king. As a minor, he would need to have regents as well as a hand of the king to rule in his name. In Westeros, the legal age is 16, which means that there would be a 5-year regency happening. I have to say, some of the most dramatic things in Aegon's reign actually happened during his regency. There are events that happen once he's an adult, of course, but it's really interesting to see the political games happening when he has no real power. Again, I had discussed this in the previous episode. Bregan Stark acted as the first hand for Aegon III. He passed judgment on a number of people who were suspected of being involved with Aegon II's death. He only stayed for a short while and then headed back to the north. If you're ever interested in me possibly doing a character profile of Craegan Stark or literally any other character or even an entire house, reach out. You can find ways to contact me on the podcast website. After that point, Aegon III marries his cousin Jaehaera Targaryen. This was intended to be a way to end the potential conflict between the two branches of the family. Though, to be honest, at this point Jaehaera is the only Targaryen with Hightower blood left. Hypothetically, if she married someone else, her children would have a potential claim if there were ambitious lords like the Hightowers willing to argue this. Though hypothetically, that's going to be ridiculous if the Hightowers or other lords try to do that. The Green faction basically argued that the Great Council of AC-101 made it clear that a man should be king. A man also has a weaker claim if it's through his mother. Look at Viserys Targaryen chosen over Laenor Velaryon, who has a claim because of his mother Rhaenys. In a sense, Aegon III has his claim through his mother, though his father is also Daemon Targaryen. So he also has a claim through that way. Regardless, you can't truly argue that Aegon as a male can't be the king against a female cousin. Having 8-year-old Jaehaera married to him just settles things within the family. I should also note it is bizarre that these literal children are married to each other. But it did occasionally happen historically. Mostly, it was to make sure the couple involved and, more importantly, their families have business taken care of as a result of the union. Alicent Hightower is still around. She had always disapproved of the idea of her granddaughter being married off to Aegon. She only put up with it towards the end of the war, mainly because she believed it would never actually happen. A betrothal isn't the same as a wedding. She was pretty angry when the wedding was actually arranged and refused to attend it. The Hand of the King after Craegan's short time in the role was Tywin Lannister. Yes, the same Tywin Lannister who suggested to Aegon II that his nephew should be executed. Crazy how things turn out. Then again, in real world history, strange things like that happened too. We, of course, have seen Tywin Lannister in the TV show. However, I do have to mention a few things about this character that happened after the events we saw in season 2. So going back to the dance for a moment, I had mentioned that he had been the master of coin and diverted a large chunk of the treasury. Rhaenyra had him imprisoned and he was tortured to reveal where he moved the money. He refused, which led to the many problems Rhaenyra endured during her short time in the capital. Tywin's time in the dungeons resulted in him being terribly mutilated to the point where he frightened people, especially ladies new to court. He would actually go about doing his business while wearing a hood that would cover much of his face. However, it gave him a sinister reputation just from his looks. You can criticize his actions and maybe judge him for them. However, this superficial judgment of him is pretty unfair. There were 7 regents chosen, with Corlys Velaryon among them. He would only serve as a regent for a year before he dies at the age of 79. I was pretty skeptical of a possible spin-off series based on Corlys Velaryon. I have to admit, given his adventures as a younger man, there could be some potentially interesting stories there. I do, however, have my share of concerns about whether another spinoff would actually make fans happy or not. I worry that it could just turn off TV fans from the saga altogether with too much poorly executed work. It does seem that the American entertainment industry is too fixated on milking IP to the last drop. But this is a podcast about A Song of Ice and Fire and not an entertainment industry one, so I'll move on. So pretty quickly, a small council was filled and members of the Kingsguard were selected. There were vacancies due to the chaos of the dance, so I feel it's important to talk about Tywin as Hand because he did well considering the circumstances. Or at least I feel that way. At any rate, Along with the young king marrying his cousin Jehara, it was important for the court to be a mix of former Green and Black faction members. It reminds me a bit of the Reconstruction period here in the U.S. after the Civil War. It was important there was a reconciliation to move past the war and bring the realm order again. Unsurprisingly, Tywin's focus was mostly on the economy and rebuilding in Westeros. Partially because he was previously the master of coin, but also, it's the most pressing concern. Without money flowing again, there's no restoration of peace and there's going to be discontent and war again. He repealed many of the taxes that the hated Lord Bartimos Celtigar enacted under Rhaenyra. He also offered loans to any lords who required additional capital to repair their keeps and lands. Tywin also approved of additional granaries to be built because, as the Starks often say, winter is coming. They had to gather up as much food as possible before it arrives. I won't really discuss too extensively in this episode, but there was, of course, conflict in the Stepstones. Just because Daemon and Corlys gained control of the islands, it doesn't mean they stayed in Westerosi control. Of course not. The different free cities started fighting over control. Tywin rejected an offer to join an alliance against Tyrosh over control of the islands. It's not too surprising considering they literally just ended a war barely a year ago. They're not going to spend money or resources into another war. As I mentioned earlier, Corlys would die by AC 132. This was another reminder of a very important problem. The current king is a child who has no heir. Baela and Rhaena are his nearest relatives, but their potential claims aren't seriously considered because they're female. There's now an interest in arranging marriages for the twins because if either girl has a son, this boy would be Aegon's potential heir unless he has his own children. Westeros can't afford another inheritance crisis. This exact issue is why I wish some TV fans would stop ignoring this issue when Daenerys Targaryen comes up. But that's for another season for me to get into. Baela is the more self-assured and stronger-willed twin. She's also the older twin and would technically be higher up in the order of succession. The small council and the regents debate on who to betroth her to, because naturally, the 16-year-old bride has no say whatsoever in who she should marry. The leading candidate was a man named Thaddeus Rowan, who was in the Black faction. The man seemed to be well-liked and kind. Problem is, he's 40 years older than Baela. He's literally older than her father, Daemon. Unsurprisingly, Baela made a run for it and reached out to Aelyn Velaryon for help. They wound up marrying each other. The small council wanted to have her marriage dissolved since she married without approval. However, Tywin is a practical man and decided it's better to announce the marriage and claim it was done with approval. To make sure they avoided the same mistake with Rhaena, she would be given more say into her choice of husband. Though it should be noted she's less rebellious than her twin, so she was more amenable to political considerations anyway. I should note here that while all of the adults in the room are busy repairing the realm and plotting for power as usual, I need to talk about Aegon and his wife. Like I've already explained, Aegon is a traumatized kid who needs a therapist. Unfortunately, psychiatrists and psychologists don't exist in Westeros. And we shouldn't forget that Aegon isn't the only traumatized child in the Red Keep. I have to say that Jaehaera has it just as bad as Aegon in many ways. She's as much of a pawn in political games as anyone else is. If you remember from episode 207, the son for a son incident went differently from how it was depicted in the show. Jaehaera had to watch her brother die. And he's not just her brother, he's her twin. She's had to flee from the Red Keep, and now she's got no other relatives other than her grandmother, her husband, Baela, and Rhaena. The fact I haven't talked about her much in these episodes just demonstrates how much of a non-entity she is in the story. It's pretty sad to think about. You'd think she would be able to find some common ground with Aegon, given he's been a pawn as well. But he's got the added burden of being a king. Not to mention, these two were technically on opposite sides of the conflict. They're not equipped to bridge the gap. As for her grandmother, Alicent, Alicent had to be separated from her only grandchild. She apparently frightened her granddaughter by telling Jaehaera she should find the opportunity to slit Aegon's throat. Alicent was so antagonistic towards Aegon that Tywin Lannister ordered her confined to Maekor's Holdfast. In many respects, Jaehaera was alone while surrounded by people. It's a really sad prospect for an 8-year-old to deal with. Fire and Blood doesn't dwell much into what these kids are doing all day in Maekor's Holdfast. It only mentions how they mostly stayed in their separate chambers. Jaehaera is understandably frightened of everything. Aegon gets paraded around in public when it was necessary for him to be seen. Otherwise, he's presumably receiving an education and he learns how to be a swordsman, but that's something I'll discuss later in this episode. Meanwhile, Alicent would eventually go through a psychological decline where she'd mourn the loss of most of her family and eventually refused to wear green again. Suffice it to say, the books George wrote didn't really depict Alicent in a very good light. She's just as ambitious as her father, Otto, and willing to do really terrible things to make sure her children are on the throne. It's really fascinating, the contrast between the book and House of the Dragon. Another important incident I'll briefly talk about has to do with Harrenhal. Yes, that place yet again is a source of conflict. It seems that the castle has become a gathering place for all sorts of criminal types wandering around in the Riverlands. One of the Kingsguard with a group of knights went to investigate, along with knights from House Derry. They found out the castle was now fortified with these criminal types. The bandits claim to be under the rule of a witch queen. And if any of you guys have been noticing how I had neglected to mention much of Alice Rivers for the last couple of episodes, congrats! In the book, Alice Rivers is practically ruling the ruins of Harrenhal as a witch queen. Long story short, most of the investigating knights die in a confrontation with one man managing to report back to the small council. It's clear to the small council that they need a larger force to clear out the bandits from Harrenhal and have a new family rule it. Alice Rivers actually claimed to have had Aemon's child and that the child should have a claim to the throne. She claims to have married Aemond before his death. Unfortunately, there's a problem with how this will be resolved because a new problem crops up just at that time. It's nearing the year AC 133 and winter has returned. Beyond it merely being winter, which is already a problem, there's a bigger issue that comes with this particular winter. This winter brought an epidemic with it, only referred to as the winter fever. It's not really clear where the disease came from. To be honest, some of the symptoms sound like something similar to the flu or some other fever. There's, of course, the fever, severe shivering, and delirium. It's said about 1 in 4 infected people would die from it. This heavily affected port areas, which is why some people suspect it was spread by foreign traders or possibly foreign fishermen. The epidemic would last until about halfway into AC 133. Many people died, including Alicent Hightower and Tywin Lannister. Interestingly enough, Aegon actually attended to Tywin's bedside during the 2 days he was ill. Aegon actually respected his hand, and admittedly, Tywin did quite a bit for the young king. You listeners can decide how you feel about the man, but I've already said my opinions. I'm afraid that I can't really discuss how the issue with Harrenhal and Alice Rivers was actually resolved. There haven't been any details explaining the situation in any other sources so far. I suspect that the intended Volume 2 of Fire and Blood would explain it, but so far George hasn't published it, assuming he actually wrote any of it. But I'm not going to go into that particular rabbit hole. I will, however, say that by AC 151, Aegon would eventually name Sir Lucas Lothston the Lord of Harrenhal. This future Lord Lothston will come up again later in this episode and in a later episode. So with Tywin Lannister dead, there needs to be another hand. And this time, one of the regents was selected, Unwin Peak. Frankly, I think this guy is basically a wannabe Otto Hightower. But of course, I have to explain who this man is first. I should make a note that unless and until we get a Fire and Blood Volume 2, we won't get the full story of what happens to this man later in life. I'm sure you're confused with what I'm talking about, but don't worry, you'll find out soon. Unwin Peak was one of the lords who followed Lord Ormond Hightower in his campaign to King's Landing. If you didn't listen to my Dance of the Dragons episodes, you'll have to go back to listen. He was involved with the First Battle of Tumbleton. He wound up joining the Caltrops and was part of the conspiracy against Hugh Hammer and Ulf White. Once it was clear that Aegon III was king, he was actually upset that he wasn't chosen as a regent for the young king. He wound up getting a seat after Corlys Velaryon dies. By the time Tywin Lannister dies, most of the regents are either dead or no longer in the city. After support from the Grand Maester, he declares himself the Hand and Lord Protector of the realm. He argues if no other regents are in the city, they effectively gave up their seats and positions. At that point, Aegon had actually made some decisions on positions, such as Hand and who to replace in the King's Guard. Unwin Peak reverses all those decisions, arguing that the king is a 12-year-old and did so without consulting his regents, etc. He conveniently has his family, personal friends, and allies taking up all sorts of positions in the administration and at court. Considering this is already a long episode, I'm only going to mention some of his nepotism placements where it's relevant for you to know about them. Aegon obviously wasn't happy about any of this, but in particular, he was angry about the Lord Commander of the Kingsguard. Unwin Peak elevated Sir Marston Waters as Lord Commander. And if you guys didn't listen to the previous episode, you should have. Nothing in this episode will make sense if you hadn't. Point is that Aegon didn't like Marston, and he'll demonstrate he doesn't particularly trust the man either later in the next episode. Along with elevating Marston, Unwin Peak would also place his nephew, Aemory Peak, and his bastard half-brother Mervyn Flowers in the Kingsguard. Unwin Peak's aunt, Lady Clarice Osgray, was named the mistress of the Queen's household. See the pattern here, listeners? It's not clear if this is just Aegon's frustration, apathy, or malicious compliance, but he does barely anything while Peak was Hand. He occasionally sat on the throne, made public appearances, or just rubber-stamped things Peak does. Aegon also develops hate for the new master-at-arms at the Red Keep. The position was taken up by Sir Gareth Long, who, you guessed it, was originally Unwin's master-at-arms from his home. Aegon refused to train as Gareth Long wanted, so Sir Gareth requested Gaemon Palehair to be the king's whipping boy. Gaemon had become Aegon's playmate and companion since Aegon II was around, if you guys remember from the previous episode. The news that Gaemon was being dealt punishment on Aegon's behalf for his refusal to comply caused him to follow Sir Gareth's training. But oh, you can imagine the growing hate and resentment he has for this man. Unwin Peak wanted to gain glory for his house, so he tries to organize a reclaiming of the Stepstones with his uncle leading the fleet. This is despite his uncle having almost no experience with ships. Alyn Velaryon was also summoned to join the expedition, which he agreed to. However, he was disgruntled with the idea of being led by Lord Peak's inexperienced uncle. Also, the strategy they came up with was too much waiting around for his taste. Alyn decided to do his own thing and actually won a battle, though it potentially antagonized Braavos. The only reason why Alyn wasn't penalized was because he became too popular and demonstrated competence as a battle commander. Unwin Peak ordered Alan Velaryon to head to the Westerlands and deal with Dalton Greyjoy. Dalton Greyjoy had started raiding the Westerlands during the dance, but hadn't stopped despite the war being over. Lord Peak thought Alan would die fighting the Ironborn. What he didn't anticipate was that before Alan would get anywhere near the Westerlands, one of Greyjoy's salt wives killed him first. Later that same year of AC 133, we unexpectedly see Jaehaera die. Just like her mother, she apparently fell out of a window. Officially, her death was declared a suicide, but what are the chances someone her age would do that? It's possible, but it's hard to imagine she'd do such a thing. It's more likely she was murdered, and there's plenty of suspects and motives for it. Why? Well, it's pretty obvious who would be motivated to get rid of Aegon's wife. The most likely suspect is the grasping Unwin Peak. Why? Well, let's go through the circumstantial evidence. Apparently, Sir Mervyn Flowers was the King's Guard assigned to her room that night. And if you recall, I did mention earlier that Sir Mervyn was Lord Unwin's bastard brother. Even if he didn't do the deed, one of Sir Unwin's personal bodyguards is the type of person who could easily kill someone without much convincing. It's suspected Sir Mervyn could have easily allowed someone else to enter her room to kill her. Plausible deniability could be at play. The biggest red flag of all is that literally 7 days after Jaehaera's death, Unwin has the audacity to state Aegon would be betrothed to his own daughter, Miriel. This was one step too far for the lords of the realm. Within days after the announcement, even a faraway lord like Craegan Stark stated the North would disapprove of such a match. Frankly, such a marriage is politically as ludicrous as Viserys marrying Alicent. Too many lords declared their disapproval. In fact, a large number of houses argued they had maiden daughters and nieces close to the king's age, too. Even though he's the hand of the king, Unwin knows he's not in a position to just ignore the complaints. Let's face it, at this point, Aegon is about 13 years old. However, let's also remember he'll be an adult in 3 years' time. Even if Aegon did marry Miriel, there's absolutely no reason why he would keep Unwin around at court. After all, Aegon has plenty of growing resentment and dislike of the man. Plus, his title as Hand isn't going to politically protect him forever. His power grab will only give him so much power before he topples. To pacify the disgruntled noble families, Unwin decides Aegon is going to be Prince Charming, looking for his Cinderella. That's right, listeners, a ball was held on Maiden's Day to introduce Aegon to the eligible highborn maidens. To remind you guys, he's a 13-year-old boy. I wouldn't be surprised if he still thinks girls have cooties or something on top of his unresolved trauma. Peak tries to game the system by making sure his daughter, Miriel, spends some time with the young king the weeks leading up to the ball. Also conveniently, there were a few candidates who suffered misfortune and accidents during the same time period before the ball. However, for some added drama, the Velaryon contingent, led by Baela and Rhaena Targaryen, arrives at the ball towards the end of the evening. This is after the poor kid has been bored greeting girls who are total strangers to him for hours. Perhaps it's because the group consists of his older sisters, who he was pretty close to, but he seemed to be more receptive when they present a candidate. They brought with them a Velaryon cousin of theirs, 6-year-old Daenerys. It was said Aegon actually smiled at meeting the pretty little girl. After meeting the final few girls left, Gaemon announced that Aegon picked Daenerys as his choice. The wedding would take place by the end of the year. Aegon actually seemed to be more motivated to do more than just brood and go about his other regular routines. Aegon actually left the Red Keep to show his new wife the capital and tried attending small council meetings. However, Unwin Peak demonstrated hostility towards Aegon even attempting to learn how to be a king like he's supposed to. Aegon would go back to hiding out in Maegor's Holdfast. I wonder if you listeners noticed that Alyn Velaryon didn't attend the Maiden's Day ball. Just to rewind slightly, Alyn had been sent off to deal with the Ironborn. During the same mission, he made a brief stop at Sunspear in Dorne. It was while in Dorne he was told that he should head over to Lys. Why? Because Prince Viserys Targaryen was a captive there and he might want to retrieve the missing prince. Confused? Let's go back to a couple of episodes ago. I had mentioned back in episode 207 about how I would get to young Viserys' fate in another episode. Well, it is that episode. After the boy was captured by the Triarchy, he was basically kidnapped and sold off to a magister in Lys. Long story short, that magister eventually dies in debt. Much of his possessions, including the magister's family, were sold off. Viserys was sent to another magister called Lysandro Roguer. Lysandro arranged for Viserys to be married off to his daughter Lara. Keep in mind, in AC 134, Viserys is 12 years old and Lara is actually 7 years older than him, so she's 19. And apparently he consummated the marriage. What the hell, George? Point is, Alyn Velaryon entered into negotiations with Lysandro Roguer, even though he actually had no authority to do so. Also, the terms are pretty ridiculous and grasping as well. They included 100,000 gold coins, trusting funds the crown had at the Iron Bank to the Roguer's bank, lordships to his sons, and most importantly, acknowledge Viserys' marriage. Alyn is not much of a negotiator and more or less agrees with it. This is what happens in the beginning of AC 134. Alyn returns with a valuable treasure for the king in the form of his long-lost brother. Suffice it to say, Aegon's happiness meter went up by 200% with the return of his little brother. Unwin Peak was beyond frustrated and angry about the whole situation. Not so much that the prince returned, but it wasn't done with him and the regents being in charge of the negotiations. It frankly wouldn't surprise me if Peak was hoping that if Viserys wasn't already married, he'd try to marry Meriel to the prince. After all, Aegon has no children of his own. This means Viserys is currently first in line after his brother. Unwin Peak issued an ultimatum to resign, but he clearly allowed the power he had inflate his ego. The other regents accepted his resignation and wound up choosing Thaddeus Rowan, the new hand. Strangely enough, they and Thaddeus opted to keep Peak's appointments in place. They're going to regret this decision soon enough. And that is part one of Aegon III's reign. If you're interested in finding out more for yourself, feel free to go to the full show notes where I will have links. Though be aware, if you do any of this research, there will be spoilers to the novels, House of the Dragon, and Max's future adaptations. Thank you for listening and tune in to the next episode where I'll finish my discussion of Aegon III. What did you think of this episode? Check out the WesterosiPrimer.com and let me know what you think of this episode. If you have a friend or two that might like the show, make sure to share.